Remember a while back I talked about the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve and things like that, and I was kind of got me thinking, but I want to talk today about good and evil. And what I want you to do is I want you to think about what you think the meaning of the word good is. Go ahead and tell me, what do you think good is? Just first thing that comes into your mind, tell me what it is. Better than bad, okay? I heard right. What else? Godly, okay. What else? Anything else? Kind, okay. Oh. What?
Forgiveness,
okay. Do what?
It works.
Good works.
Yes.
It works. Good works. Okay. Not good works, but good works. Okay.
Cheeseburgers.
That's what you think of. Mike thinks of cheeseburgers when you think of good. Hey, now that's a good one. That's a good one. Cheeseburgers. Uh-oh, we started down the road on that one, didn't we? All right. Okay. Well, I wanted to get that because you can see there's a whole plethora of things that people think about when they think about good. If you'll remember, several months ago, Jana stood up here and she talked about something that she had either dreamed or Lord told her, but basically it was that hell is going to be full of good people. You know, there's another saying that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Edmund Burke is considered the father of conservatism. He was an Irish politician in England, and he is kind of designated as the father of conservatism. One of the things, and you'll recognize this, one of the things that he was quoted as saying was, the only thing necessary for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing. But he's also quoted as saying, in doing good, we are generally cold and languid and sluggish and of all things afraid of being too much in the right. So why is all this confusion about good? I mean, even Edmund Burke, that great quote about good men doing nothing, he turns right around and says, but, you know, in doing good, we're generally cold. So why do we have all this confusion? Why would good people go to hell? So are we really using the word good correctly today? And for that matter, have we ever used the word good correctly when it comes to the Bible and its context? I'll have to say that we were taken down a long and winding road, the Beatles, when it come to King James and the word good. My gracious, it went everywhere. But again, I'm not saying that they were out and out incorrect in the translation. If you base it on their knowledge and the cultural norms of that time, they used the words correctly. But with time and our cultural changes, we've not moved beyond that. We've stuck ourselves in the cultural norms of 17th century England, which is not where we are today. So we take for granted that as we look at the interpretations and the translations and what our current understanding is, that what we think about good is correct. So what we need to do is let's start looking at good from a Hebrew context. And with that, you'd typically start with Genesis. In the beginning. You know, it's funny. It's a rabbit trail, but it came to mind, so I'm going to say it. You know, I don't have a problem with the earth being millions of years old. Science says it is, you know, and I'm okay with it taking God that much of our time perspective to create the heavens and the earth and do all the work that he performed. Do I believe that God could have done it in a few days? Absolutely. But for some reason, I don't think that God and science are really that far apart. You know, because it's only when man distorts the record that we have issue. It's when they throw in the evolution piece and they throw in this. So, anyways, that was a rabbit, and I just thought about that and thought you needed to hear it. Right back to Genesis. In Genesis 1, verse 4 says, God saw the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. And verse 10, God called the dry land and the earth, and the gathering of the waters he called the seas, and God saw that it was good. And 12, the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed after their kind, the trees bearing the fruit with seeds in them after their kind, and God saw that it was good. In 18, he says, and to govern the day and the night, and to separate the light from the darkness, and God saw that that was good. That was the sun and the moon. In 21, God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarmed after their kind, and every winged bird and its kind, and God saw that it was good. And God made the beasts of the earth and after their kind, cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the ground after its kind, and God saw that it was good. You just lost your chair. Eric's coming in. And then in verse 31, it says, God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning of the sixth day. So, Genesis goes on all the way through and states that everything God created was good. Okay. That seems to reflect that what God created was good. So if you're a good person, then you're in the same category as God's creation. So if you're a good person, how do you end up in hell? Is God's creation going to end up in hell? Don't think so. Okay. Well, that particular Hebrew word was used 566 times in the Old Testament. The root of the word was only used 22 times, and that word is tob. These words can be nouns or they can be adjectives, same word. So here we are, more confusion. Is it a noun or is it an adjective? Is it descriptive or is it there? Okay, so that word in and of itself means this: pleasant, agreeable to the senses, pleasant to the higher nature, excellent of its kind, rich, appropriate, becoming, better, glad, happy, prosperous of man's sensuous nature, understanding of man's intellectual nature, kind, benign, benefit or welfare, prosperity, happiness. So when we look at the creation and we see that God states that everything was good, he's really saying that what I created was pleasant and agreeable to the senses. It was pleasant to your higher nature, and it was excellent after its own kind. That kind of changes the perspective, really, of some of what we think about when we think about good. Still good, but we kind of turns a little bit. In other words, it just means that the other Hebrew words in there mean things similar to it: to be well, to be pleasing, to be glad, to be complete. But also, when I was thinking about the word good, this verse also came to mind. It's in Exodus 33:19. And he said, I will make my goodness pass before thee, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before thee, and will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and will show my mercy on whom I will show mercy. So I thought, well, if good is really not what I think about good, what is God's goodness then? And if you look at the word tob, which is, I'm sorry, I swapped those words. That the first word is not, yes it is, never mind. Sorry, this was a real rushed deal, and I apologize for the stumbling around here. I should have, never mind. All right, is goodness the same? It's really not. Really, the goodness that he's talking about and what he looks at in there is really beauty. So what he said was, I'm going to pass all my beauty before you. Well, that encompasses a lot of stuff, but it's still, it's not just my good or my goodness. I'm going to show you all the beautiful things about me. I'm going to pass all my beauty. In Psalms, the word is translated good in most places. That is translated good in most places. In Psalms, that word, tob, that really is good, is translated goodness. Not sure why they did that, because it's really, if you really read the words in Psalms, the actual word good fits a lot better than goodness does. But they did. So, if you look at that word in the Old Testament, the word tob was translated into these words: good, better, well, goodness, goodly, best, fair, merry, prosperity, precious, pleasing, wealth, beautiful, fairer, favor, find, kind, kindly, liketh, pleasant, please, pleasure, bountiful, cheerful, ease, graciously, joyful, kind, kindness, loving, most, pleased, ready, sweet, welfare, well-favored. Same word. So do you wonder why there's confusion? I mean, really? Come on. I mean, I'm not real sure that I could have sat in the room with those translators and just said, oh, that's okay. Just change the word to another word that you think. Now, within context of the verse, yeah, it flows a little better, but to me, it just takes it totally out of the realm of keeping that word true to its meaning. So, in close to 90% of the time, when good in the Old Testament is used as an adjective, it is really not part of the word. It's not a separate word. It is just kind of part of the word that, like good, well, like good works is, or I mean, sorry, not good works, but good name would be like reputation. So good is really not part of that piece. It's just a clarification of the word. So the New Testament Greek and Aramaic follow the same and to similar lines, which makes sense. Same translator, same people, same everything. So it all comes down to two words in the New Testament. They're both adjectives. In the New Testament, there are these two adjectives. There are three verbs and only one noun. So the New Testament uses more descriptive words for good so that it tells you what is good. But if you think about Greek, you think about the Romans and what they thought about good, it was really beauty. Look at all the statues, the people that they held in esteem. You know, it was about a beautiful body. It was about, you know, the beauty of the architecture. It was about all those things. It was all about beauty. And that's what those words mean. Beautiful, handsome, excellent, eminent, beautiful to look at. excellent in its nature and characteristics. You see? It falls back to the after its own kind. So they're all in the same piece. All right. Now that we've beat good, plumbed to death, and run over it 15 times and scooped it back up and thrown it back out in the road, you know, why am I doing all this? Well, I wanted to get you to a pretty good foundation, which I'm not sure I made it, of the word good. Because I want to get back now to the core of the message, good versus evil. So now let's go back to Genesis, where we left off, Genesis 2:9. And out of the ground made the Lord God to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, the tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Based on what we think in our current situations, how can good and evil be two sides of the same coin? How can we place these words that appear to be antonyms of each other, opposites, side by side? Well, good, by its very definition, and I like to use Webster's 1894 dictionary because I think he cuts to the chase every time. We don't have what Merriam added to Webster and, you know, what Cambridge University added to this and that. So anyways, it says, good describes that which is appealing and pleasant to the senses. Very plain, very simple. Okay. And the word for evil in the New Testament means bad, disagreeable, unpleasant, evil, displeasing, worse than, unhappy, misery, distress. So, guess what? Evil means evil. That's one where they just put it right out there. And isn't it peculiar that you add a D to the word evil? What do you get? Devil. Mm-hmm. There we go. I just thought that was a little tidbit there. Anyways, let's go back to the word tob in the Old Testament. And again, pleasant, agreeable to the senses, pleasant to the higher nature, excellent in its own kind. Those two words are very, very similar. I like to use a Bible that's called a polyglot. And what they do is they take the Hebrew words and compare it to the Strong's interpretation of what it would be in Greek. And those two words crisscross. In the Greek, it shows the Hebrew word tob. And in the Hebrew, it shows the Greek word ra, which is what we just talked about. So we see that good really is based on man's senses. Seems like we've heard that before. The old soul, the mind, the will, and the emotion, that's all based on senses. So now let's look at it a little more closely. If we look at that verse, it says that God placed in the garden the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. I think that most of the time when we really, if we were really honest, we leave out the most important aspect of that verse, which is the word knowledge. We place the concept in our mind that God had a tree of life, one that brought eternal life, and one that brought evil or death. But we tend to let knowledge and good just languish there in limbo. You know, it's just, he's got a tree of life and he's got a tree that's evil. So why did he put the knowledge of good and evil in there? Well, Adam and Eve were created not to have any knowledge, the discernment or the understanding or the perception of good or evil. Absolutely none. Now, that's hard for us to understand because we're born with that knowledge of good and evil. But they were born or created to have absolutely no knowledge, no understanding, no perception of good and evil. So why would God not want them to have this knowledge? Well, because if we look at when Adam fell, that's the foundation of the old man. When Adam and Eve understood good, Then they began to do the things that the old man now does every day. First thing they did was to experience shame. The awareness of being naked and hiding from God. They had never had those experiences before. So they were naked all the time. And for how long? I don't know. I don't know how long it was that they were in the garden before they were deceived and fell. But they just didn't have an awareness that there was anything different about it. Well, when they got that knowledge, guess what? Kaboom. Nakedness now becomes an evil thing. It's only when you begin to see yourself naked that you start to wonder, why am I naked? And why wouldn't I be covered like the animals? Or why wouldn't this happen? Or why wouldn't that? Why would God do this? They all began to question things about things that they shouldn't even have the knowledge of. For us, we think Adam and Eve would have been dorks not to know these things, not to understand all the things that the senses have. But the deal is, when Adam and Eve were first created, they had perfection of all the senses. Adam named all the animals. He was pretty smart. Adam and Eve experienced all the beauty, peace, and intimacy of the garden. Their senses were overwhelmed with things, but they just didn't know it. They didn't have that perception. It was just, it's there, you know? So, they were done without one speck of knowledge of things being pleasant or pleasing to the senses. So, hope you see where this is going. It is only when we have knowledge that perverted understandings of things occur. In the beginning, Adam and Eve truly had all knowledge. You know, I just don't believe that God put them on the earth without all the knowledge that they needed to be who they were. So, but this knowledge was a perfect understanding of everything. So, in this case, ignorance is bliss. Not knowing is truly blissful. Think about it. If you did not have to compare yourself to other people, if you did not have to think that one person's sin was greater than another, if you did not look upon yourself as unappealing, if you did not think that you were not worthy to be here, if you did not think that the person next to you at the office was looking at you with disgust, if you did not think that getting up every day feeling that you should not be here, or if you did not think that the devil was just a guy in a red suit with a pitchfork, or if you did not think that your worth is in what you do and not who you are, and on and on and on. All of this junk comes from the knowledge of good. It has nothing to do about evil. It's all in the knowledge of good. We sit back and we interpret good based on the standards of Satan and not the standard of God. If we can just do a little more to help this person or that person, if we could just give a little more money to charity or the church, if we could just provide one more job to someone who needs it, if we just work a little harder on changing ourselves and getting ourselves all shined up. Most people think those are great, good things. But they're worthless. They're absolutely worthless. And that is why hell will be full of good people. We should be very careful how we use the word good from this point forward. We need to make sure that when we use good, that we understand and ensure that the hearer is truly understanding what we say. So, what are we saying? How should we interpret good? This is demonstrated in Galatians 5. This is the knowledge of good. Galatians 5:19. Now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmities, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing and all things of, like these. Jump down to 22, and it says, this is the lack of knowledge. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such thing there is no law. We are no longer a slave to sin. We are led by the Spirit and we're not under the law. We must get to the point where we see that the knowledge of good and evil are exactly the same thing and get out of the old man thinking and move forward in the new creation that was redeemed back to our not requiring the knowledge of good and evil. If we are in the new creation, we don't need the knowledge of good and evil. We don't require it. We must look to the author and finisher of our faith and not to ourselves for our our understanding. We cannot allow the sacrifice that Jesus made for us to just continue to think about good and evil as something that is diametrically opposed to each other. We have to see it in its true light. 2 Corinthians 6:14 says, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion has light with darkness? So we don't need it. We don't need to be in that situation. If we truly understand that the knowledge of good and evil are the same and that we can no longer remain there, we will see that the new creation, the new man, has the perfect knowledge of everything. Our senses are perfect and will be used to lead us to the Creator. And that's where we need to be constantly, is being led to our Creator.